Special because it's Erev Purim, Shabbos Zachar, and on a personal note, it's my Bar Mitzvah Parsha.
Are you laning this speech?
Are you laning this speech?
When's your birthday?
I don't think you want to hear my Bar Mitzvah speech.
I do.
Are you laning it?
Truth is, a little bit embarrassing. I never gave a Bar Mitzvah speech. I wrote one, but I never gave it. I was too embarrassed.
Let's give it now.
And then now God has punished me that I should become a teacher and have to speak publicly all the time. He's like, you're not going to give the Bar Mitzvah speech. I'll show you. Yeah. Anyway, okay. This week's parsha, we have somewhat of a redundant two phrases that come up. No, skip. Yeah. Pasuk Hey. It says, "Va'eish al mizbeach tu kadbo." The fire should be on the mizbeach. Lo tichbe. You're not allowed to put it out. And then the pasuk continues, "Uvir la'akon etzim baboker baboker." You should put the wood over the fire. And then the next pasuk vav, "Eish tamid." Always the fire. Lo tichbe. Once again, the phrase "lo tichbe" repeats. So why does it say "lo tichbe" twice? Very strange. Rashi, in fact, points out that if you put out the fire, amechabeh esh ala mizbeach, if you put out the fire in the mizbeach, over bishnei lavim, you're going to be liable for two lavim. Meaning sometimes that you do a single action, but in that one single action, you're violating more than one mitzvah. Like, for example, if you eat a sheretz, one of the foods that you're not allowed to eat. So you're over, I think, six lavim. If, let's say, you eat a bug. If you eat lettuce that has on it bugs, it's the equivalent of six lavim. So here, too, you're over on two lavim. But more significantly, one could suggest the following.
Wait, two lavim, one for each of the
foods? There's two lavim. I'm about to explain. The Gemara tells us the following. The Rishami tells us that the Mizbeach, when it was parked, right, and it was built, so there was always a fire. And the second Lotichbe comes to tell you the following novelty. And when the Mizbeach was traveling, the Mizbeach traveled with a fire on it. Meaning they would take some sort of... they would take some sort of copper vessel, and they would put it on top of the fire to protect it from going out. Kind of like when you're walking down the aisle, you see like the parents holding candles, so they're in glass. That way the wind factor doesn't disturb the flame, it continues to light. So too with the Mizbeach. When they were traveling, they would cover the flame so that it would be protected from the elements, but they never put out the flame. They would only cover it so that it can continue to be lit. Lo tichbe. What does that symbolize? Eish represents Torah. Kodvari ke'esh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that his word is like fire. And the notion is the following notion. That when you're sitting in the Beis Medrash, it's very obvious to all of us that we should be very much entrenched and feel the Torah. But sometimes we think that the minute that we walk out through the Beis Medrash doors and we're out in the street, then what I do in the Beis Medrash is one thing, and what I do in the street is another. There used to be a slogan in the old Reform, German Reform movement, the early German Reform. A Jew in the house and a German in the street. Right? You separate. Certain places I'm meant to act as a Jew and certain places I'm meant to act not as a Jew. And the answer is that there's no such thing. Even when you're traveling, even when you're not within the walls of the Beis Medrash, even when you're not within the walls of the shul, the impression of Torah has to be recognized and clearly marked on you. There's a certain way of conduct which you should be very careful to follow even when not in the Beis Medrash. Our entire lives are permeated with detail, and sometimes we're resentful of it. Why do we have to be so detail-centered? Can it really matter if we have to do X or Y? Does God really care if I put on my tefillin this morning? Does He really care about the way I tie my shoelaces? Does He really care about the way I put my bed? Does He really care about the way I go to the bathroom? All of that, the answer is yes. He does really care, and that is because there's an imprint of Torah in every single element of our lives, which is actually a beautiful thing. There is nothing which is absent of the ability to sanctify. We sometimes tend to take it for granted. But that's a beautiful notion. There's nothing in our world which is For we can sanctify every single action because Torah permeates everything, not just the Beis Midrash, but also our day-to-day lives. Okay, a famous idea that just about everyone mentions in this week's Parsha, but it's famous for a reason and it bears repeating, is one that's told about the Korban Toda. The Korban Toda is known as a Korban Shlomim. However, there is one striking difference between the Korban Toda and a regular Shlomim. Normally in the Beis HaMikdash, when you're eating a Korban Shlomim, you have 2 days to eat a Korban Shlomim. Meaning the day you bring the Korban, and and the night following that day, and then the entire next day until sunset. Right, so that it's 2 days with the night in between. However, the Korban Toda is very different. The Korban Toda, you only have the day that you brought it and that night to continue eating the Korban Toda. The following day, you cannot eat a Korban Toda. The time limit you have is much shorter for a Korban Toda, different than a regular Shlomim. Now, to make matters even more complicated for the person bringing the Korban Toda is brought with 40 different types of bread. Actually, 4 different types, 10 of each. 40 loaves of bread, whether they be matzah or bread. And that's more than in any other korban. So that ironically, what you have over here is a situation where you have more food to consume, and yet less time to consume it in. So why is that? It seems so strange. So says the Netziv the following idea. And already before the Netziv, it was said by the Abarbanel, but more often than not, it's quoted in the name of the Netziv. Says the Netziv the following idea. That part of the notion of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to publicize the matter and sing praise to Him. And what the Torah over here is doing is forcing you to invite many people to feast with you on this Korban. Because alone, you will never be able to finish this Korban within the shorter time period allotted. Between the meat itself and all of the extra breads that you suddenly have to bring, it's impossible for a person alone to do it. So you would have to bring many, many, many people to do it. And thus, when you bring many people to do it, they'll come and say, hey, how come we're invited here? And you'll tell them all of the kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has bestowed upon you, and thus you will be mosif to the glory of Shem Shemayim by inviting more people. That's why the Korban Toda is eaten only in one day. But here we can add another element. And the other element, and this is not brought down in the Netziv, the other element over here is that there's a measure of haste involved in Toda. You should do it quickly. And that is a lesson for us as well. Not to procrastinate when we owe somebody a thank you. Sometimes we're like, oh yeah, you know what, I should really thank that guy. Next time I see him, I gotta make sure to thank him. What does that mean, next time I see him, I gotta make sure to thank him? If you owe a person a thank you, you should call them up and thank them immediately. There's a Rabbi Simon, who wrote the Imre Baruch, the Sefer that Jojo and I have discussed to learn. So when it came out, when Chelek Aleph came out, when Sefer Bereshis came out, so it happened to be that at the same time, Rabbi Friend, who's from Baltimore and gives a very famous shiur once a week to many, many Baalei Batim, was in New York. And he was in New York, and a friend of mine, Rabbi Storch, those of you from DRS, so Rabbi Storch was driving Rabbi Fran around. And he asked him, you know, every week at the end of your regular shiur, of this famous shiur, you give a parsha vort. So he said, how do you have a chance to find all these divrei Torah every week over the course of so many years? How do you manage to find divrei Torah? So Rabbi Fran says, well, you know, there's a lot of good books out there. There's a book called Shana Tov. And he says, actually, one of the YU fellas, because he knows Rabbi Storch, one of the YU Rabbeim, wrote a wonderful sefer called Imre Baruch. And I gathered some stuff from him also. I used some of his stuff. So Rabbi Storch was all excited. And he, after he had driven Rabbi Friend, he called up Rabbi Simon to tell him, you won't believe this. I just spoke to Rabbi Friend, and he said that he very much likes your Sfarim, and he sometimes quotes it in his shir. So Rabbi Simon said, I know. What do you mean you know? I just spoke to him now. He says, a couple of weeks ago, I got a postcard in the mail saying, thank you so much for putting out these Sfarim. They're so inspirational and I enjoy reading them so much. Signed, Yisachar Fran. Rabbi Fran. See, so many times, that's the difference. That's doing things. That's thanking a person. So many times, like, well, yeah, I should really thank that guy. So many times we read a good book, and it never even occurs to us, you know, to write to the author and thank him. Or to the publisher. Nowadays it's hard to get to the author, they're so well protected, but write to the publisher, you know, I really enjoyed that person's book. It would be a wonderful midah to not just wait, oh, if one day I should happen to bump into him at the street, I should thank him. No, when you owe a person a thank, you should act on it quickly, and that same day, one day, says the Ramban, then go ahead and thank the person. That is the lesson of a Korban Todah. Lastly, by the Korban Todah, although we'll revisit it again, I should mention one other thing. You notice in our Shmoneh Esrei, during Chazar HaShatz, there is one part where we do not rely on the Shliach Tzibur to say for us. The Shliach Tzibur says the entire thing. He says the brachos, he says the shevach, the bakashos, but there is one part where we suddenly don't trust the Shliach Tzibur. Modim, there's something called Modim de Rabbanan. When he starts to say Modim, we say Modim also. And the Abu Jaham says that when it comes to Modim, it's much nicer and less, you know, if you don't let somebody else do it for you. When you owe a thanks to somebody, it should come from you. Because thanking a person is not just because the other person needs to hear thank you. It's not just because the other person needs to hear thanks and feel good about himself. It's because you also need to inculcate in yourself this notion of being able to thank people and to recognize that you get favors from people. Because once you have that midah ingrained in you of being able to recognize favors from other people, you'll be able to recognize favors as well from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why we are called Yehudim. Right, the notion of Vada, to be able to recognize, admit, and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that He does for us. Okay. The Medrash Tanchuma asks Bilam, the Medrash Tanchuma says that the Gentiles of the world came to Bilam, their Navi, and they said to him, you know, I don't understand. We don't understand. It's not fair. Why is it that the Jews are commanded to bring a korban, and we are not commanded to bring a korban? It seems a little bit unfair. The Gentiles, the non-Jews of the world, they come to Vilna. Why did he not give us the privilege of bringing sacrifices? So Bilam told them, well, it's because the Jews were mekabel the Torah as opposed to you. You were not mekabel the Torah. So, what does that mean? What's the connection between Kabbalah's Torah and Korbanos? What was Bilam alluding to? So perhaps it's the following idea. There's a medrash that relates that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was about to give the Torah, he didn't just go straight to the Jews. First, he went to other nations and he said to them, hey, people of Esav, do you want the Torah? And they say, well, you know, what does it say in it? So they say, it says in it, you're not allowed to murder. Not allowed to murder? I'm mad. I like murder too much. Forget it. And he went to the people of Ishmael, what does it say in it? They say, well, what does it say in it? It says, don't steal. Don't steal. No, I don't stand the chance. He went to the Jews, and what did the Jews say? Nasev and Ishmael. So what is that indicative of? That means it's indicative of the following, that the nations of the world said we're willing to accept the Torah, but it has to be on our terms, right? It cannot impinge too much on my lifestyle. I'm willing to accept the Torah, provided that I can still continue to live my own life, you know, and, you know, as part of my life, stress being on me, part of me, and my life, you know, if the Torah fits into that picture, then great, I'm happy to take it. But the minute it doesn't fit into that picture, then forget it. The Jews, however, said, it doesn't really matter if it fits into our picture or not. Right? What matters is your picture. Nasev and Nishma. They didn't care, oh, does it but I happen to like this and I happen to like that. It doesn't matter. What matters is you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I am less relevant than you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I'm willing to sacrifice, there's that word, I'm willing to sacrifice my own desires for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is why we are zochet to korbanos. The korban is exactly that. In last week's parsha, the Ramban writes that a korban is symbolic of a person's willing to literally put himself on top of the altar and sacrifice himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want human sacrifice. He would rather us live and just symbolize that with the korban. But it's a desire and willingness to say that we're willing to give up whatever it is that it takes in order to do your bidding, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not about us, it's about you. That's why we were Zoche to the Korbanos as opposed to the Umos HaOlam, to the nations of the world. Okay. I want to revisit the Korban Todah for a second. Those of you that are sensitive to reading of these parshas, you would know that most of the Korbanos were spoken about already in Parshas Vayikra, in last week's Parsha. So it's slightly strange that in this week's Parsha is when we have the Korban Todah. And what makes it doubly strange is that this week's Parsha is actually told to who? How does the Parsha open? Tzavet Aharon ve'et banav. It's told to Aaron and his children, as if the Korban Todah is only spoken to Aaron and his children, the Kohanim. It's not really for all Jews. What's that all about? So this is the question of Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, we'll tell a story about him a little bit later when we get to the Purim. So Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld was a Rav in Yerushalayim. He lived around the same time as Rav Kook. Although ideologically they were very, very opposed to... They were very opposed to each other's hashkafas, but they were excellent. They were bosom buddies. They were excellent friends. So Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld asked this question again: why is it that the Korban Todah is essentially spoken to the Kohanim and not to the people of Klal Yisrael? It says the following: when is a Korban Todah brought? Korban Todah, the Gemara tells us, is brought after particular events that transpire in the person's life. So for example, if a person was sick and he became healthy, he would bring a Korban Todah. Basically like today, he would say Birkas HaGomel. If a person traveled overseas or in a desert, he would say HaGomel. Nowadays he says HaGomel. He would bring a Korban Todah. If a person was incarcerated in the jail and he got out, he would bring a Korban Todah. Says Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, those don't seem like such miraculous events. Like, people get healthy every day, Baruch Hashem. And people cross over the oceans on an airplane every day. And sea as well, and people get in jail. Okay. People get out of jail. Those do not seem so miraculous. So why is it that you bring a Korban Todah for that? Says Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, because the truth is, everything that happens in life is miraculous. But the fact that there is a Kriyas Yamsuf, what makes Kriyas Yamsuf any more miraculous than the fact that that when I open up my refrigerator, there's food in there? Right? The only difference between those two events is the frequency with which I am accustomed to seeing it. Kriyas Yamsuf was once in the history of the world. So we tend to think of it as miraculous. But, I open my fridge and there's always food in there. Somebody once came to Rav Shach after having a baby girl born, and they asked him, he got married, a year later he had a baby girl. He asked him, should I make a kiddush? So he said to him, well, let me ask you something. If, let's say you were married for 8 years, and after 8 years you were blessed with a child, would you make a kiddush? He said, of course I would make a kiddush. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved you 7 years of pain, angst, and waiting, and you're not going to make a kiddush for that? Of course you should make a kiddush. What's even the question? I don't understand. Why was the person asking? Because he sees children being born all the time, and he's just gotten used to it. It's not miraculous. Of course it's miraculous. It's just that it happens frequently. Right? So when things happen frequently, we take it for granted. But believe it or not, yes, it is an absolute miracle every time you get in an airplane and you successfully transport yourself over the Atlantic Ocean from here to the United States. That's a miracle. That's unbelievable. So what if people do it every day, thousands of times? So what? It's miraculous nevertheless. But when we see miracles all the time, then we tend to forget it. Says Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, the Beis HaMikdash, where the Kohanim pretty much was the home court of the Kohanim, they saw miracles all the time. The Mishnah and Avos list 10 constant miracles that were in the Beis HaMikdash. But there's even more miracles that were listed there. For example, when they would split the birds to sacrifice on the korban, and then on the mizbech, and then they would throw the innards of the bird on the floor would swallow up the innards, they would disappear. But you see it every day, and you're like, you never think twice about it, right? The pillar of fire never deviated, it was always straight up, no matter what the wind factor, but you get used to it. When it rained, the Mishnah tells us, then it never put out the fire of the Mizbeach. Getting back to that Lotech Be'er. Rain never put out, water never put out the fire of the Mizbeach. But if you were to see it all the time, eventually you get used to it and you don't tend to think of it as miraculous anymore. That's why the Kohanim are told this special mitzvah of the Korban Todah. Because they're the ones that see the miracles more often. They're the ones that would take it for granted and think that they don't have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These things that we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for, getting out of the hospital and crossing, it's miraculous. But because we're so accustomed to seeing it with so much frequency, we're like, it's not a big deal. It's a big deal. And we have to recognize it's a big deal, and we have to be thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. Okay. One more idea from the Parsha, and then we'll switch over, hopefully, to... And we'll switch over to Purim. Maybe two more ideas from the Parsha. As I told you, this is my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. I am not blessed with... This is another one of God's cruel... proof is a sense of humor. Not cruel, chas v'shalom, but sense of humor. I am not blessed by any means with a voice that is pleasant to listeners, nor do I have such a great sense of music and tone. And yet, in my parsha, there's one of only four shalshelets in the entire Torah. Shalshelet is the longest cantillation that exists in the Torah. Right? So it's Vayishchat. That was my Bar Mitzvah.
Where is
what
this?
Imitation? I do it a little bit faster now.
Where is this?
This is in the Parsha, Shishi, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Parakhet, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Right? There's only three other times that it appears in the Torah, okay? Let's try to go through them now.
Yosef.
The first time, good. Well, that's not the first time, but previously we had seen it by Yosef. When Yosef refused to be with Eshes Potiphar, it says, Vayemayan. Very good. Where else do we see it?
By Omar. By Abraham.
By Sarah.
No, it's in Vayera, I think.
One of the
parts. Well, this was already in Bereshis. We also have it by Lot. When Lot was running away from Sodom, it says, Vayitmama. He lingered. Right? And lastly, we have it by Yosef, Lot, and
Meir.
I don't remember the fourth one right now.
That's a crazy guess.
I don't remember the fourth one right now. But you'll see from the first two examples that normally a shalshelet, and even the way it's shaped, if you look at it, it's like this. It's shaped like this. It goes back and forth. The shalshelet is meant to signify to us a certain amount of reticence, of not sure, like a certain of tension, torn. For example, Yosef. Here he has Eshes Potiphar. The Gemara tells us one of the seven most beautiful women of all time. Not in the world, all time. Right? So, and she is desperate to seduce him. And he's refusing. But you can imagine that that's a difficult refusal. There's a certain amount of reticence there. So he's no! And he pulls away. Right? Lot, right? He wanted to stay in the city of Sodom. He was a little bit... he had chosen that place. It was rich. It was plenty of land for his cattle. And to go away from it... Right? Vayit mama, he lingered. Oh, I kind of want to go back. I'm kind of drawn to the evilness of Sodom. So what's the... But over here, suddenly, when it comes to Vayishchat, Moshe Rabbeinu, shechting the isle of the Miluim, the special isle that they brought during the Shivas Yemei Miluim, why is he a little bit reluctant to do it? What's his hesitation? What's his hang-up? Why does he not? What's his struggle? What's the inner struggle that the Shalshelot is trying to signify? So Yaakov Neuberger from Bergenfield said the following idea. He said that this was a once-in-a-lifetime for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, during the 7 days of the Miluim, was acting as a Kohen. He got to sacrifice the bundles, right? Who's doing all of these avodas over here? It's Moshe. Moshe is shechting. Moshe is throwing the dam, sprinkling the dam on the Mizbeach. Moshe is the one that's burning it, right? Who normally does that action? Kohanim normally do those avodas. So this was just at the very initial start, while Moshe was training his brother and children to take over, he was doing it, meaning he was playing Kohen. But at the end of 7 days of Miluim, what was going to happen after the week was going to be over? That's right. The Kohanim are going to take over, and then Moshe would become just a regular Levi. I mean, not regular Israel. He would be a Levi. He wouldn't get to sacrifice anymore. He wouldn't get to do certain mitzvahs that he was entitled to do now. And that was his... That was what was causing his back and forth, his to and fro. That's why he was a little bit sad. He was thinking to himself, it's great that I get to shecht it now, but the minute I finish this, it's over. It's kind of like when you're in a store and you had a good meal, and then you order you haven't gotten all you can eat, so that you still are in the mood for dessert, and then you get a great dessert, and the dessert is good, so you kind of like, you're eating a little bit slower because you want to make it last, and then you get to the last bite and you're like, you know, I don't want it to end, and there's a certain amount of almost sadness, even though it's a delicious dessert, you're kind of sad, like, oh well, and you have that last bite. So that was Moshe's, oh well. He desired to do mitzvah so badly that he was a little bit disappointed. I can't believe it's coming to an end. I mean, there's a certain drive and desire that we should have to do mitzvahs. And when we have that drive and desire to do mitzvahs, it's a totally different performance of the mitzvah. It's told that when Rav Levi Yitzchak, this is our last parsha shiur, I think, because next week we're in the Shomron, right? Oh no, that's in 2 weeks. Oh, we'll have pressure. Well, anyway, put it on your Pesach. No, it's not on your Pesach. When you're Blevi Yitzchak Mibarditchev, Motzei Pesach, he used to stay up all night. Why would he stay up all night? Some people stay up all night because they can't wait to get that first fresh baked bread at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, nice and hot out of the oven, put a little bit of margarine on it or butter, and oh, it's delicious. What? I'm sorry.
Especially on the fast day.
Right? So some people can't wait, right? And they stay up all night, especially after Pesach. I haven't had chametz in a week, right? That's the first question the rabbi gets. Rabbi, why can we have chametz? Everyone lines up to the pizza store. My sister orders pre-Pesach. She orders the first pizza pies to come out of her pizza shop. Yeah, she's like... But although, sometimes you go more than weeks with that.
Pizza quiet?
No, my sister lives in Cheshmonaim. Pizza Mia, I think it's called. Anyway, so... But why did the Berditchever stay up all night? Because for 7 days now, he was unable to put on his tefillin. And he missed the tefillin so much. He's like, I can't wait. And he would wait until he saw the first rays of light. Ah! Quickly, put on the tefillin. That's the notion of desire and anticipation to want to do mitzvahs. You just can't get enough. And that was Moshe. He was a little bit sad that it's coming to an end. The Gra at the end of his life, his Talmidim were with him, and he was crying. And they said to him, what are you crying about? Are you actually worried about, you know, Olam Haba? You have every single minute of your life accounted for. You know exactly what you did all the time. So I'm crying because I'm not going to have a chance to do mitzvahs anymore. So that's it. It's over. Here, I wake up in the morning. I get to put on tzitzis. Boom. What a thrill to be able to do mitzvahs. I get to learn Torah. I get to put on my tefillin. There's so many things. I get to make sure that I'm nice to my neighbor, and I help him load and unload his wagon. Where do you get out? You don't have that anywhere else. He says, it's about to come to an end. And that's why he was disappointed. But that was Moshe's disappointment as well. As much as he wanted his brother to take over, but there was also part of him that was desirous of doing more mitzvahs. And when you have desire, as I said before, then it changes everything. The drive and the desire helps our performance peak. I'll give you an example. In 1983, Stanley Cup Finals, Edmonton Oilers, at the time famous because they had the great one, Wayne Gretzky, and Mark Messier, as versus the powerhouse, they had won the Stanley Cup 3 years in a row and they were going for a fourth, the New York Islanders. Okay? Now, it was 1983, the Islanders swept the Oilers. Four games. In and out. Boom. After game four, Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier were walking to the parking lot. And they had noticed that it was surprisingly not as loud as one would have imagined in the Islanders' locker room. So they try to peek inside and they noticed that in fact there wasn't all the standard, they had done literally, the champagne or whatever, but they were actually just like sitting there, a bag of ice on the knee for one person, a heating pad on the shoulder of another, the third one was like changing a band-aid on the cut that he had over his eye. They were all just battered and bruised. And Mark Messier turned to the great one, to Wayne Gretzky, and he said to him, "This is the reason why we lost." Because they were willing to put themselves out a lot more. They wanted it a lot more. They desired it a lot more. And that's the notion of this shalshelet. When you desire HaKadosh Baruch Hu's avoda, you do it in such a totally different way than if you're, whatever, okay, now I have to daven, alright, what can I do? Attendance is being taken, so I'll come. But if you run and you desire it, it's a totally different action. Okay, let's do one Purim idea.
By the way, here's the fourth one.
An idea that Rav Meiselis touched upon last night, and that's the following. I told you Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld lived in Yerushalayim in the early 1900s. He had a partner, he was good friends like I told you with Rav Cook, but in addition he had a person that he would go to the mikvah every week. Every week before Shabbos, him and Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, another giant of that generation, would go to the mikveh together. And Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld noticed that Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer was taking a long time in the mikveh. He says, "I don't understand what, everyone has their own different customs. Some people go in the mikveh, they dip once, some people dip three times, some people dip seven, some go 12, some go 72. Each person has his own, 72, because 72 names of Hashem, letters in Hashem's name. Each person has his own, right? Some people just do it once, but hold their breath for 72 seconds. I don't know if that's true. But everyone has his own minhag. So Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld turned to Rav Meltzer and he said to him, "You take a very long time at the mikvah, which is uncharacteristic to someone of your stature who's always keeping tabs on his time and making sure that he's not wasting a second. Like, why do you take such a long time in the mikvah?" So Rav Zalman Meltzer answered to Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, he said, "It's quite simple." He said, "When a person wants to convert and become a Jew, so he goes to a mikvah. And after dipping in the mikvah and accepting himself mitzvahs, then he becomes a Jew." Right? If he's a boy, obviously he needs a bris mila as well. "Then he becomes a Jew." So basically, a mikvah has the power to turn a Gentile to a Jew. Without the mikvah, he can't do it. The transformation does not happen. The mikvah transforms a non-Jew, a Gentile, into a Jew. So he says, if a mikvah has the power to transform a Gentile into a Jew, then imagine how much more it can do for a Jew. If I'm already Jewish, they can make me, like super Jew. I think Rav Kalwasser has that t-shirt that says like super Jew with like the paste coming off the... It can make me super Jew.
So plastic David Simpson shirt.
Says Rav Wolfson the following idea. It says in the pasuk, and this is a pasuk that Rav Meiselich alluded to last night as well. Rabim me'amei aretz misyahadim. Many of the people of the land became Jews. Ki nafal pachad Mordechai alehem. Right, they were impacted by the fear. They were afraid. Oh no. Best to become Jewish now, right? And it's not necessarily just fear of being killed. It could also be fear in the sense of awe. They were just so awed by the events that transpired. And oh, look at that. Vashti was killed. And then Esther took over. And then miraculously Esther is a Jew. And they saw everything fall into place. They're like, whoa, that's an amazing thing. And they became Jews. So says Rav Moshe Wolfson, if Purim has the ability to make even non-Jews into Jews, imagine how much more of a Jew it can make all of us that are already Jewish. And to tap into your innermost desires, as Rav Mazalish said last night, to run to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who loves us so much. Heilig HaBachurim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you so much. And here you are, you're the one day a year where you're standing like the chicken in the middle. And on the one side you see the person that's mutilated you and painted you and painted, spilled the black ink all over you and plucked your feathers and twisted your head and your, and then on the other hand you see the sweet owner that's taken care of you so long. You see the Yetzer Hara on one side and you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the other side. So here we have the ability on Purim, we can see it so clearly. We see that the person over there just wants to hurt us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu to our right just wants to help us and shower us with love. That's the power of Purim. Rabbi Me'amaretzit Midyahadim. We have the ability to take our Yiddishkeit to the next level and use it as a springboard to become even greater over the Hashem. Meretz Hashem, we should be zochet to be mekayim it already on Shabbos, and then certainly going into Purim. Yeah.